Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso.
On some headphones or something. This sounds like crap. I hope it doesn't sound like a pile of doo-doo from where you're listening. Wow. God, I got to turn that up to hear it. Well, let me just turn that down. It's Roddy Mysterioso here for whatever day this is of whatever month this is of 2012. And as promised, we have on the line with us the, I don't know about if he called the founder, but the spreader of the word of the Church of the Subgenius, Reverend Ivan Stang, who's been an influence on me and, dare I say it, at least an acquaintance for many, 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 many years. And one of the listeners wrote in and said, hey, why don't you do some show about the Subgenius people? Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Hey, great. Great idea. So, Reverend Stang, are you there? Can you hear me? God, I hope it... Did you hear my intro sort of, kind of?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That means it got recorded. Somebody did some wacky thing in the studio here and... I, one, can't hear myself too well, and two, all the wires are crossed, so at least I can hear you, you can hear me, the levels are going, which means it's probably recording.
Believe it or not, Greg, this is the second time tonight that I've been through this routine. When I went in to do my show at the radio station at Cleveland State, I couldn't hear my own mic over the headphones, so luckily I'd brought in a canned show. And wasn't planning to do a live one, partly because I wanted to save myself for you, Greg. But so don't feel alone. The conspiracy is in both radio stations.
I can't believe that it's worked its way in here, but, you know, there's anarchist posters all over the walls and strange pictures of George Bush that have been mutilated and the Three Stooges and all kinds of stuff and children's drawings. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's actually reached into this radio station and probably has a long time ago, which means everybody that's listening is listening to what they're supposed to be. Around, and now it's going to put a timestamp on me, in college around 83 or 4, a book called The Book of the Subgenius was published, and it affected my life forevermore in very basic ways, one of which is the theme that I use, which is from Plan 9 from Outer Space, obviously.
Right, Criswell.
Yeah, Criswell.
The dulcet tones of Criswell.
Yeah, somebody described his speaking style as stentorian, which I think that word was invented because of Criswell.
Maybe. Certainly wasn't for stentors.
Did you ever see that or hear that song that Mae West composed called Criswell Predicts?
I guess I didn't.
Really? I have to send it to you then.
Wow.
They were buddies. I mean, she would give him one of her old Cadillacs every year for $1 in her older age.
Well, I can understand that. I actually was given a Cadillac by a relative, and within 3 weeks, I gave it away to a friend for Christmas, just like Elvis. The reason being that the thing got 3 miles to a gallon, and it cost me more to drive to work in it than I was making. And it was the size of a yacht. You know, it was gigantic. It was like a 1960s Cadillac, just back when they made things like tractors, you know.
Yeah, well, they were built.
Nothing was lightweight.
Yeah, they were built, I think, probably to move rockets. They could have put the Saturn V on that, like that crawler, and taken it out to where it took off from Florida there. What happened in 1983 is I read that book, The Book of the Subgenius, and it blew the top of my head off and changed my life. And I think, like a lot of people, I thought, oh, this is what I've been trying to say. It's I'm not exactly sure what they're saying, but this is exactly what I'm trying to say. And you know, eventually I said, I got to get in touch with these guys. And I ended up talking to or communicating by mail, I guess, and eventually phone.
Yeah, I remember that mail. Yeah, that was where they would actually bring you physical objects like handwritten letters or typed things on pieces of paper.
What?
That was a long time ago.
That's
work. You would read things, but they were on pieces of paper. There was no, you didn't have to plug it in or anything or recharge its batteries. It was just there. A guy for 22 cents, a guy would carry the letter across the country, or a zine. In the case we were trading zines.
Yes.
Back then, before there was websites, there were zines.
Uh huh. Yeah, there was
instant print shops. And
that was it's an old form of look in the history books, kids. Should we do a kind of a show where we explain what the church is about, or do we talk about whatever the hell we want? What do you want to do, or both?
Oh, why not both? That's my answer to almost everything. Why not both?
Yeah, both is better.
Is it a religion or a joke? Well, why not both?
Yeah, exactly. I'm joking and I'm serious. That answer I got from you and Philo and Dr. Howell and all these people. Why did you decide to spread this word? What inspired you? Why do you do this? It's certainly I was about to say certainly not for the money, but I think the church has done all right, right?
Well, Bob wanted it to happen, so it happened. That's J.R. Bob Dobbs, the real founder of the Church of the Subgenius. Not that anyone's actually met him in a long time that we have records of. People report glimpses now and then, but old Pipe Face, we call him. I can't tell you exactly why Bob wanted the Church of the Subgenius to happen, aside from the obvious financial possibilities. But I can tell you how I got interested in the whole thing. I'd started collecting what you might call kook pamphlets, or to be more polite, writings by the differently sane. and this at that time, to an amateur, the Masons are kooky or weird. The Rosicrucians are weird when you're just beginning. After a while, you know, it's like, oh, well, those are the straight guys.
Yeah.
You know, those are the normal ones. But when I met Philo Drummond, I found that he also had been collecting little odd pamphlets and things. And he and I actually found that we worked together well by trolling people on CB radios. Remember, that was like the internet, another internet of the 80s, or the late 70s. There was that fad of everybody had to have a CB radio.
Yeah.
So you could talk to strangers for as many as 19 miles around. And Philo and I would sit in his car in his driveway and just harass strangers and say things like, "We are communicating to you from beyond the stars. Earth must cease all atomic testing," that kind of thing. And we got so into it that we actually started writing down ideas that we would use to troll people with. At one point, we realized we were looking at a John Birch Society pamphlet, and Philo pointed out that it was only one sheet of paper printed both sides and then folded three ways. And he was going, you know, at these new instant print places, we could just make up a something and print this up and leave it in laundromats. That was originally the idea, was to leave this mysterious little mind screwer in laundromats. I, of course, as usual, kind of got carried away, and it wasn't one sheet of paper. It was two big 11 by 17 sheets folded four ways. It was Philo's idea to use clip art. He was saying, we got to put artwork in it. I was going, we can't afford art. You're insane. He was working as a Yellow Page salesman at the time. He whipped out this giant book of copyright-free, public domain, old-fashioned clip art. He goes, like, for instance, this would be perfect. There's all these pictures of sub-geniuses frolicking. I bet there's some perfect pictures of Bob in here. And in the people section, I can remember to this day the moment he flipped randomly to this page, and we both saw that classic Dobbs head face, the full-on face with the pipe, mm-hmm. the halftone.
Yeah.
And we went, oh, my God, that's him. That's definitely him. That is the picture of Bob. And to this day, I have the original Dobbs head that all others devolved from in my house. But Philo has a virginal one that has never been copied except in a blurry photograph where the two of us are showing it off. And that's the untouched virgin Dobbs head. Whereas mine, the one in my house has been, its descendants have been, everybody's had that.
Yeah, the one Philo has is like the Shroud of Turin, I guess. It's the Shroud of Bob.
We would have thought that, you know, well, so what? It's just this square guy with a pipe. But the thing is, if you look through magazines from the 50s and 60s, just any magazine, Popular Mechanics, say, or Life or whatnot, you'd see all these ads with that guy with the pipe, the square-looking dude, but with a slightly insane grin. And he would usually be in slack. He'd be in a hammock while his wife mowed the lawn, say, or he'd be fishing, you know, looking happy on a sailboat, that kind of thing. Advertising cigarettes or pipes or whatever. Dobbs hats, of course. There's a type of hat called a Dobbs hat that he must have founded that. I don't know. There's so many pictures of him in those stupid hats.
Yeah.
So, you know, we realized, oh, my God, this guy's really important. And at that point, Philo said, yes, Ivan, he is important. And we realized that he was the king of all the sub-geniuses, which was a term Philo had just taught me.
Where did he find it? Was he divinely inspired?
It came shooting out of his mouth. We were going, well, you know, the reason we aren't rich yet, it's not that we're not geniuses or anything. We're just more like sub-geniuses. And when he said that, a lot of little tumblers in the padlock in my brain fell.
Yeah.
And I went, now I think I know what to do with all these otherwise useless skills I have, like publishing zines, and because I had done that before as a sci-fi fan, and, you know, audio editing and stuff like that. I thought, wow, we could have like a little club, and it would be, you know, the kind of weirdos that like Fire Sign Theater and Frank Zappa and Underground Comics and Captain Beefheart and so forth. Later on, I found, oh, well, that describes almost everybody now. But at the time, the combination of, like for instance, Philo was into Beefheart and Marvel Comics. Well, at that time in the 70s, that didn't usually go together.
No, you wouldn't find those people in the same room. They'd kill each other.
No, and so we thought, oh, well, we'll just, I think we know how to tell weirdos what they most want to hear. And you know what I learned, Greg? I learned how easy it would be to do another Scientology or Mormonism or whatever. All you have to do is keep a straight face. We were not able to do that. possibly because our parents raised us right. I don't know. Maybe they raised us wrong. But it turned out that we had all this mystic wisdom at hand, taught by Bob, that far outshone everything the Scientologists or Urantia had to offer. And then there was a bottomless pit of it, because we'd seen every monster movie ever made and read an awful lot of horror comics. And we also, I'll admit, did strip a lot of occult religions for all the good parts.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
the sexy stuff.
What good cult leader doesn't do that? Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. We peed on the shoulders of giants, you could say.
Yeah.
And so, at the time, this was like around 79, because we published that very first pamphlet, and I picked it up from the printer January 2nd, 1980, so it's very easy to date things from, except for the fact that we obviously don't really know even what year this is, or what planet. You were having trouble remembering the day earlier, right?
Oh, I never remember that.
Back in the 50s, Bob predicted that on July 5th, 1998, the world would end for everybody except the subgeniuses. And 1998 came, and we all sat around waiting, and nothing happened, and I got lynched. And every year we've waited on July 5th ever since. But the main point of the whole thing was, obviously, Bob was teaching us the hard way that we really don't know. We don't know. If Bob said that the aliens were going to come in 98, obviously it ain't 98 yet. It's before 1998. The conspiracy's been messing with clocks and daylight savings time and the Gregorian calendar and all this kind of stuff for so long that we don't, we have no idea. And frankly, how do we know this is even still Earth? According to the most recent Subgenius book, Earth and Mars were switched using World War II as a cover just to distract people. And overnight, the whole thing was switched around.
This is a pretty vast conspiracy. I mean, it reaches even further than I thought from reading early Subgenius literature.
Well, that's because you missed our 2006 book.
Right.
Don't worry. A lot of people did. It wasn't a Simon & Schuster publication. It was a Running Press. And they went out of business right after they published it, and another publisher picked it up, and I mean, took the copies, basically. So I'm still I had to whip that thing out in 3 months.
More conspiracy.
The third of the Subgenius Bibles. There was Book of the Subgenius in the 80s, and then in the 90s we did Revelation X.
Yeah.
Paul Mavridis was did a lot of the work on that. Not just me, and he was a big part of that. And then we weren't cool for a while, and then we got cool again around 2005 or so. And in 2006, we got another publisher. But like I say, like almost every other publisher, within the last 5 years, they went out of business.
Yeah.
I mean, most bookstores have gone out of business.
Oh, yeah. Well, all of them. All the places where I used to pick up all the stuff that I liked is gone now. And you've got and this is a way for people to track what, you know, the conspiracy finds out what you're buying by having to go through the internet, use your credit card, and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed, I'm sure you've noticed this too. When a product comes out that you really, really like, as soon as they realize you're buying it, the thing is off of the shelves forever. For instance, in my case, it was somebody released a Dayglo Blue squeeze butter or margarine or something. It was squeeze margarine that was in Dayglo Blue or Dayglo Pink.
Yeah.
Well, I was fascinated by those, and as soon as I started using them regularly, of course, it was gone. A cheap wine that you like, you know. It'll only be around until they realize you're buying it. So, obviously, a lot of our favorite shows and books and things, just books in general, they went, oh, the Subgeniuses are reading those things. Let's make them unfashionable. Well, but we still have to read something. I know. We'll invent an electronic gizmo that you have to have to read a book. Yeah, that's it. We'll call it the I-something. And so, obviously, in order to live and pay our rent, we have to learn how to make e-books and e-shows and podcasts like this one.
Yeah, you're right. I keep thinking, oh, well, I just got to keep up. And I think about it in the wrong way. And I'm glad that I saw you at the radio station there and asked you to come on the show, because you're making this a lot clearer to me than it was before this call. That happens to me, too. All the great stuff just disappears. And I can't understand why that is. So you're saying it's like a targeted thing.
Hendrix and Zappa are gone, and Britney Spears is all over the radio with Rush Limbaugh. What are you going to do, you know? Well, just have your own radio show and try to get more listeners than Rush. I don't think I've managed to do that myself. Yeah, it's funny. We've been doing the Hour of Slack since October of 1985.
Go ahead.
Are you really hearing sirens?
Oh, okay. Usually people can hear them. They come right by the window. As soon as anybody says anything remotely important, these sirens go by the window here at the studio. It's amazing.
These are police sirens, and
yes,
not the kind that
police and fire.
Odysseus had to deal with, right?
No, it's police and fire. At least I think it is. That's what it looks like. And I interrupted you. I'm so sorry.
I don't think you did.
Oh, okay. No, well, the sirens
did. Whatever I was saying, you better pick up on it. If I said it, then yeah, whatever.
Well, what I picked up on and the thread that's been hanging is what you said about subgenius and how that word came about, and how that there's a phrase that came out of the first book that I carry with me all the time, and it's and it might have something to do with everything we're talking about, which was, if you're so rich, how come you're not smart? I always love that one.
Well, that's pretty easy one to understand. If you're born rich, you can afford to be stupid, gullible, superstitious, and a jerk. So that would explain quite a few of our rival cultists and cult believer types, and what they do with their money.
Yeah.
Whereas I've noticed that people who had to make a living and struggle tend to be a little more suspicious of, you know, when they first start to hear somebody tell them just what they most wanted to hear. If you're smart, that's when you become most suspicious, because somebody's obviously trying to sell you something.
Your
best friends won't tell you what you most want to hear. They'll tell you the horrible truth. That's why most people go to psychiatrists instead of their best friends. Because the psychiatrist, getting paid $120 an hour, will happily tell you what you most want to hear. It's all everybody else's fault. Whereas your friends would go, well, look, you've been a jerk lately. And it's another reason why we're not as big as Scientology yet. We're just not as willing to lie, as long as we can tell the truth in a funnier way, you know.
Oh, now I see
it goes
why
down. It goes down a little easier with sugar, and so we couch everything in a sort of a humorous bed of it, so that it seduces the believer into sending us the all important $35. by the way, membership has gone up finally.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I mean, when you started, it was like 10 or 20, right?
Yeah, I think it. I think I remember it always being 20 for like years.
Yeah, and when we did Revelation X, we thought, well, we better raise it, and then it stayed $30 for 15 years, and just this last year, we raised it to 35.
Yeah, well, part of the problem. That I think that's part of the problem. It's like you said, if you're telling people what they most want to hear, I get, or the truth, they they don't know yet that they have to pay for that or pay dearly for it. Because somebody like L. Ron Hubbard can take, those people can take all of your money. And they're not.
Well, I think if we charged more, we'd be taken more seriously. But to tell the truth, when I run into people who take this crap seriously, it scares the bejesus out of me. It creeps me out. I hate minions and believers and bobbies.
I couldn't even remember that word the other day.
It's funny, you know, we went through a stage where I had a partner and we had employees and so forth. And now that I kind of do all the dirty work myself, I mean, we still have hundreds of collaborators on the fun stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm doing all the dirty work, like filling orders and so forth myself. By golly, everything goes so much more smoothly when it's just a dictatorship. And, you know, the guy in charge actually cares. So, you know, our orders go out much quicker and the production values are higher and I get to keep the money. And it actually pays my, you know, I haven't had to work for anybody else since 1995 or so.
Well, this is perfect. It's
it didn't turn out to be a get rich quick scheme. It turned out to be a hard work and pay your bills scheme. but it, at least I didn't have to work for somebody else, you know. So, and by golly, we've sold I think 5 ordainments since Saturday morning. I haven't checked my email. Yeah. That's kind of normal. We usually sell for a while there, we're selling 5 ordainments a day, roughly. And in when the bottom fell out of the economy, it went down to like 2 a day, which was not enough. In fact, last year we had a bit of a financial crisis, and I had to admit that we weren't actually rich. We weren't as famous as people thought, and we really could stand a donation. And it worked. I don't want to say how well it worked, to tell the truth. I just finished paying the corporate taxes. But it did work, and everything's going fine again. We're planning our 16th. No, actually, this will technically be the 17th. X Day drill. We had the first X Day drill in 96.
Yeah.
Then the real X Day happened in 98. And we started calling them, you know, then there was X Day 2 and X Day 3. We're about to have X Day 15, but it's actually the 17th time we've done it. For 17 years, we will have been gathering in some clothing optional hippie campground at 7 o'clock in the morning on July 5th, waiting for the saucers. And it's funny, we get more people each July 5th instead of fewer.
Yeah, well,
last year we had a film crew shooting in 3D, shot the whole thing. And wouldn't you know it, at the end of it, my wife said, Ivan, your fly has been unzipped this entire time. So there was my big chance at 3D showbiz. And I just hope they kept the camera tilted up most of the time.
Yeah, well, you hope so. That's not Hello? Surprising.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me at all? Uh-oh.
So there was my big chance at 3D showbiz. I can't hear you.
Oh, wow. I've got...
I can hear the screen.
Well, you hope so. That's not surprising. Can you hear me?
I can't hear you.
Oh, my God. Hey, the conspiracy's working again.
Hello?
Can you
hear me? I'm going to hang up now.
Okay.
And I will let you call me back again.
Yes, all right.
At the same number.
All right.
I don't know what else to do because I can't hear you, but the rest of the world can hear me.
And I can hear you, but not me.
Thank
so.
You.
All right. Weird. See, that's the part of conspiracy. I don't know what's going on here. The Skype is the thing. So let's call him up here. Let's. I will play some of the Hour of Slack show that from years ago, actually. There we go.
Oh, yes. Semper Sub Genius, dear friends, by Phineas Narco. Reverend Phineas Narco. And he could do it after all. And friends, you can get more Phineas Narco by download from this website, nationalcynical.com. He's part of a group called National Cynical Radio. And that's national, one word, cynical.
Cynical.com.
Phineas Narco. Before that, drugged up collage. God, what kind of a show is this? Anyway, that was put together by our friend Soso Dada, a Reverend Soso Dada, who lives in New York currently, I think. And we have all sorts of fun and games and tapes and Fernandin and the Lemur cut-ups, which were in there and which will continue to be in here and in all shows. And Lonesome Cowboys and Dave is here. And Princess,
hi,
we are go.
Hi, how are you?
Queen of all the UFOs.
To see you tonight.
And even Pater Nostril is here.
Good to see everyone out there listening.
Pater Nostril, who is usually not in the studio, but is our point man out at Brushwood, where we drill for the end of the world.
And we pump.
Next day coming up soon. Pump, pump, pumping.
Pump, pump, pump. We prompt the jackass muscle. We make them think without brains. We teach them to see without eyes, to smell without nostrils. Even all part of nostril is a mess. And to live where there is nothing to live for. What is that? Why, that's your own hometown, USA.
Home sweet home.
We're back at Gabby.
It's like a suppository made of lawnmowers.
And lung tissue. Let's not forget good old wholesome lung tissue.
Hard
what powers our lawnmowers? Hard as...
You been smoking lunk again?
No, I've been drinking...
Lung junk?
I've been smoking a little bit of lung junk, but mostly I'm drinking Abyssinian peas water.
Really?
Yes. It imparts wisdom. And,
oh, now he's Mr. Fancy Pants. Oh, I guess it's going to be absinthe next.
Oh, yeah. I'm an absinthe swimmer.
Yeah, well... Friends, welcome to another Hour of Slack. This is Hour of Slack 982. That's how many there have been.
Here we go.
I can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you too. I think we will bypass the computer stuff, and I'll just do it old style the way I used to. Whoa, that's one of the problems is the feedback. The way I used to before all this fancified computer stuff came along, and I keep adopting and adopting and adapting, and then once in a while get screwed royally, just like just now talking to you.
I've still got the kind of phone in my house that you that works even if the power is off.
Oh, the landline.
The really old kind. That's not what I'm on now. I'm using my wife's modern day cell phone, but. Yeah, I did. I decided I didn't want to deal with Skype because, to tell the truth, I don't want people calling me a lot. I prefer the hermit's life a bit.
Have you had problems with, like, weirdos and bobbies and people like that just kind of accreting on and screwing up your life? And
yes.
It's a stupid question, of course.
I honestly spend... an inordinate amount of time having to deal with people who got the wrong idea about the Church of the Subgenius. And I have to cross my fingers and go, look, man, this is just a bunch of stuff we came up with. You know, just clip art. Come on. what are you? It's not your private little army, dude. And it's not mine. It's not going to be anybody's private army under my watch. So, you know, quit. Taking it exactly the wrong way rather than going where the finger points. They always want to suck on the finger.
Oh, it's the dog and the TV, you know.
But anytime you have an occult organization of any kind, it's going to attract a certain unpleasant type of individual who has no power or respect in their real life, but they're looking to get some from this imaginary little world or little clique. And we've ended up, I've gotten to where what I call my cradar is quite well developed. I can spot the crazies by certain key things in their first approach, whether it's their handwriting or the way they talk on the phone or just, you know, the way they come off. You know, I've encountered people who came to me to tell me they were Jesus, or there have been several people who said, I know that you based that subgenius stuff on me, because my name is Bob, too. It's not Bob Dobbs, but I use that name sometimes now. So it's, yeah, you based it all on me. I understand. I'm not going to make you pay me or anything.
Well, how nice of
them. There's been a disturbing number of those. They never look or sound anything like Bob. And Bob is the most common name in the English language. It's not exactly magic, you know. So like I say, if we could have kept a straight face, we'd be as big as Scientology. But instead, we're not even as big as Mad Magazine. I often have to use that phrase, you know, because we do have events in real life and marriages and, you know, all the things that go with a real religion, strangely enough. And I've had to say the phrase, officer, have you ever seen Mad Magazine? and that's the key line, you know, is you invoke Mad Magazine. And if it's police officers, they usually have. I would, with other people, I might say, are you familiar with National Lampoon or The Onion? But, the cops seem to be more of the mad reader types. So, I still, you know, if Mad didn't run so many ads, I would still subscribe. If for no other reason than to know what people are watching on TV. That's how my wife and I used to follow pop culture. We'd read Mad Magazine and go, oh, that's what ER is about. Oh, that's what that show House is about. Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, that's...
Twilight. So it's teenage vampires and... Oh, okay, now I get it. Mad was able to keep us up on what the pinks, the humans, the normals were watching and thinking.
That's how I use... that's funny you say that. That's how I use South Park now. That's the first time I hear about a lot of things.
Yeah. I hate to admit it, but a lot of my knowledge of American history comes from The Onion and National Lampoon, and a lot of my pop culture knowledge comes from South Park and stuff like... Now, talk about... Those guys are the ones I'm jealous of. I'd like to cut their fingers off so they can't animate anymore. I'm so jealous of them. But I guess if I can admit I'm jealous, then I'm not, you know, chronically jealous.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I'm respectful of them. They were at the right place at the right time. And yeah, we thought of cussing stick figure children, too. But at the time, the idea of it ever being on TV in any way was ludicrous. Because at the time, there was, I think cable TV was just being invented.
And George Clooney wasn't around, so you couldn't send him your tapes of that, so.
Right.
Wasn't he just arrested or something? I can't. I thought I heard that somewhere.
The what?
I thought I heard
George Clooney. He was arrested in some protests. Some protest against the Syrian government, I believe.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't anything serious. Oh, well, it was Syrian, but not serious.
Right. Yeah, it didn't have anything to do with the planet Sirius. Or the star, I mean. It's not a planet, what am I saying?
Yeah,
the binary star system.
The scary binary African tribe knew about it beforehand, binary star system thing, yeah. I would go out and protest that, I guess.
So, yeah, I do read the headlines, and I read the comments in Yahoo.com. A lot of people do that. They'll just skip the articles and read the comments.
Oh, yeah, well, you get a lot more info.
It's like a car wreck. like, you know, it's like watching a train wreck. It's like watching America dumbing down right in front of your very eyes. I guess school teachers have to deal with the same sort of depressing thing. I voluntarily read the comments made by the yahoos on yahoo.com, and that kind of thing used to just infuriate me, and I would do political editorials on Hour of Slat, but I'm not as angry anymore, and I quit trying to save the world. I'd much rather be part of its destruction at this point. Under Bob, of course. I wouldn't do it, you know, outside of his supervision.
Well, I think that's a lot more interesting, and it's this weird thing when you get older that you realize you can scream all you want, but it's not going to do a whole hell of a lot of good, so you might as well, I guess, laugh a lot more.
Yeah, when you're young, you want to save the world, and you know just what it needs. And somehow, when you get older, all you really want to do is save money, and you don't really care what the world needs, because you realize it's going to go on within you and without you, as the Beatles said.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm not going to go out of my way trying to force slack on anybody, because I don't know what slack is to anybody else.
Right, and it, just that phrase, they're forcing slack on somebody, that kind of negates the...
the contradiction in terms. We won't even tell people what slack is, because it's going to be different for each person.
Yeah, it's funny. You have to find that out later. And that's what it's sort of like what you said about people that join these things. Some of them join up because there's some deficiency somewhere, and then they won't even know what, you know, their slack is kind of a false slack, I guess, if they have any. Then as they get older, if they're not too stupid, and they're not too, haven't been lied to too much and haven't believed it too much, they start to realize what you just said, that they're, you know, what was that thing in Hitchhiker's Guide? Hang all the sense of it and just have a good time, something like that.
Well, one subgenius pointed out that false slack is better than no slack at all. But yeah. Then another subgenius pointed out that false slack is no slack at all, which kind of depressed those of us who had lots of false slack. So I kind of switched over. I feel like I'm finally getting real slack. When I was a fiery young preacher, I was preaching slack, and I admitted this, but I myself did not really have slack. But I feel like I kind of got my act together a little better, and I feel pretty lucky now.
If somebody's listening and you, well, this is the Alan Watts thing. If you got to describe it, well, those who say don't know and those who know don't say, or something like that. What?
Right. I don't even trust the people who say that much.
Right. Exactly. Which makes you wonder, so, you know, yeah, makes you wonder why they said it in the first place. Exactly.
It's all just a bunch of showing off, signifying.
Yeah.
A bunch of signifying monkeys. I know how it is. I enjoy doing it. I do it for fun now. I actually enjoy preaching to crowds of non-subgeniuses and explaining it to them, because they laugh a lot more than the subgeniuses who've already heard it and are shouting louder than I am half the time.
It's kind of frightening.
So, I save my good stuff for the pagan events that I go to, where I'm like the only skeptic. I'm the mascot skeptic for a big pagan event here in the Northeast called Starwood. I even helped organize it. I kind of married into it.
Yeah.
And then we found this really cool campground that lent itself to doing subgenius events. In the last couple of years, that campground came under different management, and we had to switch to another clothing optional campground in Ohio. But it works just great.
Well, it's closer to you too.
Well, actually, the new one's further away from me.
Oh, really?
But it's hard to find a place that will let you, number one, make noise and not necessarily pretty noise all night long for a week, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Also, they let the people take their shirts off if they want to, even ladies.
Well, then it's half clothing optional.
We would only use clothing optional places just because a lot of other things are optional at those kinds of places.
Yeah.
Most of us keep our clothes on. Now, here's an interesting thing. You know, in the early years, Subgenius was definitely what you would call a sausage fest. It tended to be mostly guys. You know, it's like going to a Devo concert or Noir or something. You know, let's face it. But it's kind of like build it and they will come. And we started calling it a sex cult and had a good Sex for Mutants dating league and also starting to do those X-Day outdoor events at those campgrounds, it kind of came true. And it turned into quite a big social organization in a way. That was something I didn't really expect. But I've lost count of how many people have met and gotten married within the Church of the Subgenius situation. We basically promised them, look, if you can't get laid at X Day, you probably just can't get laid. and that was a mean thing to say because some people can't even get laid at X Day, usually because they're trying too hard. And there's still the boys outnumber the girls. There's no question about that. But the situation has improved so vastly that, there's domestic disputes we have to deal with. Did you hear about the Subgenius child custody case?
Yes, I heard about it quite. My wife actually gave money to the legal fund.
Yeah, that poor couple, you know, they got their kid back.
Oh, good.
Not because of the law, but because the biological father screwed up so bad. the courts were going to keep this kid with a chronic, malingering, depressed, unemployed, uneducated, racist a kid who's living off his mom, instead of the Subgenius college-educated mom who had a new husband. They both had jobs. It was like they didn't have police records. But they got caught on the internet doing funny things with their clothing off at this campground, and suddenly his family judge decided that they weren't fit parents because they put on a funny play. Nothing worse than you'd see at a typical frat party, honestly, except that there was religion involved. They were actually doing a takeoff on Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion of the Christ. They didn't think it was bloody enough, and they wanted to make a bloodier version of the Stations of the Cross. It wasn't really very bloody, but it was sort of funny. The judge didn't like it, though, and as I say, all's well that ends well in that they got their kid back, but they're gonna be in debt forever.
Yeah.
And Reverend Magdalene remains the only person we know of who by law cannot have Subgenius materials in her house. That's like saying, no, I'm sorry, you can't have the Onion. You can't subscribe to the Onion because your child might want something in it seriously. You know, so it's horrifying, really, what people will believe. It's so easy for them to believe in some devil or space monster or angels, and it's so hard for them to believe that they themselves could find slack without anybody's help if they just learned how to really look and truly observe their options and act upon them. But, you know, humans are creatures of habit, and until they send their $35 to the Church of the Subgenius and develop new habits that only we can cure them of, then they're doomed.
You did say something that the last Devival that I went to, which was in the 90s, the last thing you said, and I reminded you of this when we were at the radio station there a couple weeks ago, you said, there's a step that you get to that's after the Church of the Subgenius, but don't take that step. Don't you dare do that.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to know what that step is.
I was standing in the back and I yelled, is that leaving the church? And you didn't answer me.
Oh, well, you know, when you're on stage, you have to tune out the hecklers.
Yeah, of course.
You have to, because otherwise they'll just tear you to pieces. You respond to that first heckler and you're dead, man. So,
Shows,
you know, everybody's a heckler. We give an award every year for best heckler.
Well, you should. I think everybody should. I've heard heckler. Oh, everybody has. You've heard hecklers that are much better than the person that's on stage.
Well, what upsets me. the best heckler we have is a guy who happens to live right here in Cleveland, where I now live. And so he's at a lot of our shows. And that guy is so fast. What he's hollering from the back of the room cracks me up. and his timing is great, though. He waits until one of those little pauses, you know. And
yeah.
Or he's so fast, he can get it out between words. I should have him on the radio show.
I think you should. That sounds perfect.
That little clip he ran, by the way, had Lonesome Cowboy Dave on it.
Uh-huh.
And he's still a big part of the Hour of Slack. Whenever we do live shows, he's either comes to the station or he calls in. And you remember Janer Hypercleats? He used to be our
scouting. Yes, I when he was living in L.A., I bought him lunch a few times, but I did not make the mistake of letting him stay at my house. Yes, I remember Janer. That'd be a good book.
Yeah, well, Janer... And the church had to part ways for a number of reasons I don't want to go into. But Lonesome Cowboy Dave was more like a nice Janer. He was really surreal. I mean, he has this ability to take a conversation and immediately plunge it into this amazing dreamlike surreality. But he's a nice person. So when I used to come up here for shows, I would always be on this. I'd find time to get on this show called Swamp Radio, ESO Swamp Radio, and that's how I met a whole lot of the folks up here. That and Starwood, and we had more business going on in Cleveland than we did in Texas. Now, of course, as soon as I moved to Ohio, it switched back. You know, now I'm making more money off of Texans than I am off of Ohioans because my address is in Ohio. So go figure. Actually, we'd be dead if it wasn't for the internet and the rest of the world. About half of our memberships now are coming in from overseas: England, Germany, Denmark. Not much from Russia or China yet. Although there have been two devivals in China.
Really?
And
in China?
In Japan. Huh?
Really? In China? I don't believe it. I would like to see, have you seen or heard any of that? You probably couldn't understand it, but you could see it.
Oh, no. There was Americans who lived there.
Oh, okay.
I spent 6 weeks in Beijing myself on a film job in the 80s. And in fact, I left a copy of Book of the Subgenius there exactly 3 years to the day before the Tiananmen Square massacre. I don't know how to explain that, but there's subgeniuses who've ended up working overseas and they spread the word. It doesn't really go over well with the native Chinese. It's expatriates, you know, usually are the ones who show up. But yeah, we've got a videotape of the two Beijing devivals, and we were doing Amsterdam. There's almost every year there's some kind of subgenius event in Amsterdam, often corresponding with the Cannabis Cup.
Yeah, well, Amsterdam sounds like the kind of place that Bob would have lived for a while.
Yeah, yeah, it's really fun, and they get it. They already have a lot of slack there to begin with, or relative to some countries.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell.
And England's always been great with Subgenius. I'm sure there's certain aspects of our humor that kind of they may not exactly get, but it doesn't matter. They say bulb so beautifully. I just love the way they say bulb dulps. I treasure all of the rants done, that we've recorded by our British and Irish friends, Scott friends. And, I don't know what we do without the internet, but on the other hand, the internet is where the kooks all come from. You know, I'm not worried about the ones who post hate rants or pretend to be me or whatever. Those aren't the ones that worry me. The ones that worry me are the ones that you never hear from. You know, the ones who don't sit and grumble onto some internet forum day in and day out. Because, you know, they're not going to go anywhere. They're just going to sit on the internet grumbling.
Yeah, they got an outlet. That's their outlet.
Yeah. But it's very strange. I've had all the bad side of being a minor celebrity without the big money. We've had medium to low money, but relatively high rate of stalkers and lunatics, you know. What happens is they encounter the Subgenius stuff and they go, oh my God, it's true. I am different and better than everybody else just because I'm different. And this is all true. We'll, all of us weirdos will, especially me, will be saved when the aliens come and all those people I hate who have jobs and responsibilities and kids, they'll all die. And then they find out, no, actually, sir, you're what we're making fun of. And then they dedicate their lives to the destruction of the evil Bob Dobbs and Reverend Stang and the pedophile Philo and evil Dr. Howe. You know how evil he is.
I've experienced it personally.
As you can tell how evil I must be. You know, I mean, I've been accused. There's this one guy who, I swear, I'm not exaggerating. This guy, in all seriousness, multiple times has accused me personally and lots of other people of being, let me see if I can get this right, Jewish, pagan, satanic, Mason Muslims. It's really hard to get all of those together. Now, as it happens, I was, my next door neighbor is a Subgenius and a pagan. And I was explaining that whole routine. I said, Jewish, pagan, satanic, Masons. Those don't usually all go together. My neighbor spoke up and said, I am all of those things, and I'm gay too. It was satanic only in that Anton LaVey kind of put on Satanism, if you know what I mean. The original Church of Satan was about as serious as Church of the Subgenius. Although they didn't have the laugh track that we do. And a lot of people, obviously, you know, took it quite seriously. And now that old Anton is dead, I guess there are people who really do follow the Lord Satan. I don't get it, because it's like you have to be a Christian to believe in Satan, right?
Right.
You've got to be some kind of a religious geek to begin with to believe in the devil. He doesn't really appear in the Old Testament as such.
Yeah, not really. Really early on, yeah, but most of the time, no, not really, I guess. I think
there's not a hell in the Old Testament to speak of. They refer to what some people interpret as hell was really the name of a nasty garbage dump near Jerusalem. funny. You know what? Sometimes non-believers know more about these religious books than the believers do.
I think that's most of the time. I find that the more religious people, they tend to shut out the parts that they don't want to. They don't want to hear, or people that they don't want pointed out to them. And the people that are scholars and are not very religious but are very interested in the religion have a more broad view of the whole thing. And, you know, it's like, well, there's a contradiction here, but who cares? You know, look at the important
right.
stuff.
I mean, you know, obviously, if I hadn't been interested in religion, I wouldn't be doing this. The Book of the Subgenius wouldn't have references to so many different religions. But I was actually raised secular humanist, pretty much. And yet, my dad, who is as skeptical as anybody I've ever known, he also knows more about the Bible than most preachers do. And in fact, he even teaches a Bible class in a small town in Texas. But he loves to teach them the contradictory stuff, you know, the two different versions of Genesis and parts where, like, you know, a she-bear will kill 50 little kids because they made fun of somebody being bald. All of this under God's watch, you know.
Yeah.
So, and some preachers actually preach doubt. And I think that's a valuable lesson. Doubt is a real valuable thing. That's the lesson of X Day, you know. Maybe it's possible that even a preacher like Bob could be wrong or even lie. Hard as it is to imagine, I mean, a preacher lying or being wrong, but yet, there you go. So, in some ways, doubt is a gift. It can be a great gift to some people.
Bob Wilson, Robert Anton Wilson, signed the first book I ever read by him to me once, and the only thing he wrote in it was doubt and his name.
He kind of, the first time I pestered him to get his attention, he kind of did the same thing. I came up, just really wanted an excuse to send him the Subgenius pamphlet. And somebody had given me his address, and I came up with a question about an obscure UFO cult from Texas called the Silver Shirts.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I asked
Kelly.
Him about that. And he mentioned a few of the, he said a little bit about it, but I was amazed that he wrote back at all. And he said, if you get any deeper into UFOs, be sure to keep your sense of humor. Now, oddly enough, I was told the very same thing by John Keel.
Yes.
Who more or less said flat to my face, you know, this is just showbiz. I've mentioned that to people who had just become fresh Mothman fanatics. I said, you know, Keel was a carny.
Yeah.
You know, he worked in carnivals and stuff. And I've mentioned what he had said to me, and they don't like hearing that. But you know that article I did for you, for your zine Excluded Middle?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
I described my abduction experience,
yes.
Which the punchline was it was all a dream. I had seen the movie of Whitley Strieber's Communion, and then 2 weeks later I had this classic night hag dream, right?
Yeah.
Only with UFO grays. Well, I've run into people who like just kind of skimmed that article and assumed that I had been abducted and would be sympathetic to their girlfriend's abduction tales. And I had to go, no, man, you didn't read the article. At the end, I said it was just it was a common dream. People have been having dreams like this forever. There may be grays and UFOs and all that. I'm not saying there's not. I'm just saying I don't know.
Yeah.
And the guy would then proceed as if he'd never heard a word I said. You know, well, okay. Well, anyway, my girlfriend was abducted by this UFO, and like, you know, they like made her think it was a dream, and like,
yeah, doubt.
I think Robert Anton Wilson really said it all when he said, maybe if people said maybe more often, the world might be a slightly more pleasant place.
Or yeah, or use the E-prime thing of not using what is it? Is any form of the word is.
Right, that's tricky.
It's very tricky.
Bill Clinton had trouble with that. But why do we have to know? Since when did you, me, or any other human suddenly deserve to know why the universe is here and its exact nature in some anthropomorphic way? I find it very easy to just say, I don't know.
Yeah, it takes a long time for a lot of people. And some people never develop that talent, I guess it is.
When we were on our road trip recently, my wife and I had the most wonderful experience listening to Penn Jillette's audio book of his autobiographical book called God No. And it's basically just some reminiscences and stories by an obnoxious atheist who happens to be really, really funny and a dues-paying subgenius minister. I'm not in close touch with Penn Jillette at all, but he quoted Bob in his book, and his book is absolutely hilarious, and especially the audio book, if you can find a copy of it. God No by Penn Jillette. It is, it'll crack you up every minute or so.
He has cracked
every page.
He has cracked me up. I wrote a very nasty screed about Penn and Teller on that UFO site about how closed-minded they were. And the funny thing is, half the time I agree with them, and the other half I think he's insane, and that might be by design.
Yeah, I'm like with him all the way, and then suddenly he'll start talking about Ayn Rand or something, and it's like, you're losing me, man. But for the most part, I have to say, above all, his stuff is funny. The thing that he did on Bullshit, their show Bullshit, that had me absolutely furious. I couldn't believe that they could make me mad. But it was a trick. It was a trick that he used to make me mad. They were doing a report about PETA, you know, people or ethical treatment of animals.
Yeah, yeah.
And making them look like the idiots that they, most of them are. But at one point, Penn bellows out, if I had the choice of saving the last chimpanzee on Earth or an AIDS-ridden junkie, I'd save the AIDS-ridden junkie. I was really upset.
Yeah.
I mean, for several months, I'd mulled on that, going, how can he say a thing like that? And one day, it just suddenly out of like a bolt out of the blue, well, if it's the last chimpanzee, what's the difference? Even if it's the last 10 chimpanzees and they're all male, it's still the end of the line, dude. Like, there was some guy who shot the last, some kind of tiger, not a Bengal tiger, they're still around, but some, you know, very rare tiger. And this guy knew he was killing the last one. And he got caught, and he pointed out, he goes, well, it was the last one. There aren't going to be any more, and nobody else is going to get to shoot the last one, so I thought I might as well do it.
How sure is he?
You know, logically, what Penn said makes sense. I personally wouldn't want to pull the trigger and kill the last chimpanzee. In fact, I sincerely, truly hope that I die before seeing any more extinctions of large primates. But I probably will. But he did trick me. It was a magic trick. If it's the last chimpanzee, then it does make more sense to save the AIDS-ridden junkie.
Well, at least you can talk to the AIDS-ridden junkie. And he probably won't rip your face off.
Well, don't give him Prozac. chimpanzees are more violent and horrible than humans. Luckily, they can't invent nuclear weapons yet, but they do... even the bonobos, it turns out, are quite brutal. But
yeah, they form armies and have wars and everything, just like we do.
Yeah, that's how we got where we are. It's a shameful history, but there wouldn't be one if it hadn't been that way. I had not ever watched that show Deadwood, and a friend of mine gave me copies of the whole thing.
That's not that zombie show, is it?
No. Deadwood was a historical show about Deadwood, South Dakota, which for a few years was like another country inside the United States.
Yeah.
It was like an outlaw territory. And the most brutal character in there is this guy based on a real person named Al Swearingen. And I suddenly one day went, I want to be like Al. What would Al do? He's going to be my moral compass from now on. He's the most reprehensible, evil, ape-like bastard. But everything he does, it's like as you watch the show, it turns out that he's really the lesser of many evils. And most of the time when he's killing somebody, he's got a fairly good reason for it, as opposed to just, getting drunk and killing somebody for kicks. So my wife was very disturbed to find that I was considered this villain a hero. But it's funny, if you think about just how rough things were before us white boys got to be able to sit around. Growing up in the 50s, it was like utopia if you were a white boy in America and you weren't poor.
Yeah,
if your family was just ordinary middle class, remember that?
I think middle class.
They're kind of, I haven't seen one of those in years, but, we had it really easy, most of us.
Kind of getting by and not getting by now.
Say that again?
I think there's three classes now. It's not upper, middle, and lower. It's upper, getting by, and not getting by. I think that's about it. Or maybe it's just two, getting by and not getting by.
There's an upper, all right. They're...
Yeah, well, they fall under getting by, but just getting by really well.
Yeah, I guess so. well, technically, I'm getting by, but I don't feel like a one percenter.
Oh, well, nobody I know feels like that, or maybe I wouldn't be doing this show.
On the other hand, though, just the fact that I'm a subgenius means that I'm a one percenter of a different kind. Subgeniuses are, certainly probably less than 1% of the population. And if it ever did get popular, we'd know we were doing something wrong. By definition, the whole thing is really, truly is for weirdos. There have been times when it depressed me how geeky some of them were. And I'm a geek. I mean, I'm a four-eyed pencil neck geek. But some people are way geekier than I am. And just like in high school, or the zoo, the monkey house, the big ones pick on the little ones. And I found myself looking down on some subgeniuses because they were such nerds. But then, even by my standards, it sunk in, well, of course they are, and that's why Bob is their god, because there really is a conspiracy of normal people unconsciously or consciously robbing away the slack of the abnormal people, be they nerds or bikers. Anybody who, the nail that sticks up, they will try to hammer it down, and it will get hammered down sooner or later. Nobody's biography, as my friend Dr. Legume said, has a happy ending. But, I guess we must look for a balance between personal slack and not killing all of our neighbors. My philosophy is just wait for the aliens to kill all my neighbors. One of these days, next day will come. And I sent in my $30. I really did. I actually wrote a check to Subgenius Foundation in 1997 and sent it in. And I didn't even have to endorse the check. It was rubber stamped by somebody else. So I paid. And I still have my little membership card in my pocket. You never know. The rupture could happen tomorrow.
Oh, shit, I better find my card. You know, I told you, I didn't actually send in my money until after you sent me a check. I said, okay, I got money out of the Church of the Subgenius before they got money out of me, so I'll join now. And I came out behind.
Oh, my God.
I came out behind on the deal, but I still got money out of the church first for contributing to Bob Apocryphon.
Oh, that's right. I guess your name is in Revelation X somewhere, right?
Yeah, it's on. My name is on the. It's a photo of the egg carton with the alien heads painted on them on the eggs.
Right. Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and my name's on the picture, but my subgenius name is in the credits as Anomalous Phenomena. That's what I picked as my name for some reason.
Wow, I'm surprised that I kept track of that.
I remember you sent me a sheet of here's geeky. You sent me a graph paper with all the different contributors' names. And how
That's
much
right.
they'd contributed, and how much that might yep. be worth on the advance, and proportionally, who got what?
Well,
I got like $25 or something.
Yeah, we never made another buck off of that book besides the advance. They gave us, I forget what it was. It wasn't nearly as much as Book of Subgenius. It was only like $5,000 or something.
Oh God!
And I thought the only way to do this is just mathematically, you know. The book was exactly half art and half text, and we did it by space, how much paper space was taken up. And I could remember who did which paragraphs and which sentences. I actually have the copy where I went through and, you know, methodically made that particular book was mostly, the words were mostly me, Philo, and G. Gordon Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
And then Paul Mavridis cleaned it all up a lot. It's funny, you know, when I read those old books, I don't see them like other people do. I hear my friend who first said that line at a party, and I pulled out my little sheet of paper and wrote it down. And you can't say we don't give credit. We give credit where credit's due, and we actually keep pretty good books. We just, and I still pay royalties on Book of the Subgenius, which is still in print, and we still get a royalty check from that. They're small, like, you know, $300 or so, $500 every 6 months. And I split that with Philo and John Hagen Bremer and Mavridis, Puzzling Evidence, and Sterno in different amounts. I still get the biggest share because I did more dirty work than anybody. Like keeping the damn thing on sale. You know, I probably sell more of those things than Amazon.com does.
What do you mean to the subsite?
We learned early on you can't make a living off books unless you're Danielle Steele or Tom Clancy or, God forbid, Dean Koontz.
or a publisher.
Or unless you crank out a book every 3 months, you know, then somebody like Robert Anton. But look at poor Pope Bob. Robert Anton Wilson would have died in poverty, except that somebody said, hey, this guy's about to die in poverty, and people started throwing money his way.
Yeah.
I gave him everything we had in the bank at the time. When we fell on hard times last year, people came through and saved my personal financial ass. But we weren't lying. We were, you know, it wasn't, I didn't make a joke out of it. It was the first time we didn't make a joke out of something. That was the only time we ever really made any real money. So, God, go figure.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people, certainly me, a lot of my early moral judgment, my enjoyment of life, and my eventual, you know, getting out of my own way, came, you know, from Bob Wilson, probably some from like Aleister Crowley or something like that, and a lot from Church of the Subgenius, which admittedly is
I'm happy to hear that. I know that, you know, for me and a lot of people in my shoes, I probably would have killed myself in high school if it hadn't been for the Fire Sign Theater.
Yeah, me too.
early Frank Zappa stuff.
And, yep.
You know, stuff, things so I didn't feel completely alone. It was like, oh my God, there are others out there who are as crazy as me, or maybe we're not the crazy ones.
Yeah.
And that is really important, especially for, you know, for people who aren't sure if they have any chance at all. And when you're young, you know, just a girl looking at you wrong can make you suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm real, real proud of the fact that I know that we've helped in that respect. We've helped people who felt like they were terminally alone. And we've kind of said, look, we're not going to lie to you. You may still not get laid, but at least you're not alone. There's lots of us who couldn't get laid, you know? So, or like people like me who had to get married to get laid, practically. That was not the most recent wife you met. My second wife, Princess We Are Does. She was a friend. Actually, both of them were friends. Then we got married. But,
well, that's the way it should work. I think the other part of the weirdo thing is that you would hear the Fire Sign Theater or listen to... You know when I discovered Devo was in junior high school? But you realize that, you know, one, you weren't the only one, and two, these people didn't seem to, at least on the surface, give a shit what people thought.
Right.
And that was real important.
In Devo's case, I think I can honestly say, yeah, they really didn't give a shit.